episode 9 of the Tech Search Podcast. I am your host, Guillermo Ortiz. And yeah, I guess we're nearly to episode 10. Episode 9, obviously it's January at the moment. and CES is underway in Las Vegas, which is the big new thing. We're into 2019 now fully, and there are a couple of new stories that I do want to talk about. Two phones in particular, which look to be pretty impressive, and then some CES news, I suppose. But first, I want to talk a little bit about my personal experiences with the Nintendo Switch and a game that I just got on the PS4. So, the Nintendo Switch, I got it for Christmas, and it's a pretty good console for the price, I think. It's about 320 euros, and what, if you don't know, the Nintendo Switch, what it allows you to do is to play in different ways. It's a modular console whereby the controllers on the sides, well, the sides detach from the main screen and become separate controllers for two-player action, which is very useful. In fact, I used this on the plane. I played with a friend on the way back from Madrid, and it came in very handy. It's a pretty good thing to have. Quite convenient, especially on commuting with someone long distance. And then you can just play normally, and then you can also hook it up to a TV using a dock, which I have tried. And if you have a pretty good television, it looks fantastic. The resolution is capped at 720p. I believe it's a 720p IPS LCD panel. It looks pretty good. The colors are quite vibrant. However, I would say that the glare, if it's directly under sunlight, is pretty visible. I wouldn't play it directly under sunlight. But it's an overall pretty good panel. The games that I got were Mario Odyssey and Super Smash Bros., Zelda Breath of the Wild, and Skyrim. Quite enjoyed Zelda Breath of the Wild. It's one of the best games for the Switch. I watched a bunch of reviews before buying the game. It's a pretty decent game where you just explore your Zelda himself, and you go on quests and missions, and it's a big, wide-open world. But the game that I've enjoyed the most out of all the Nintendo Switch games, it's actually been Super Smash Bros. That's just been extremely fun to play on arcade mode, just playing with friends and everything. Even hooking it up and playing on the television with two players has been very fun. It's very fast-paced, especially as you get into the harder difficulties, harder levels, and you start having to face new enemies. It just gets a lot harder, a lot more exciting. It's a great game. And the Switch, it's a pretty good console. I would say the build quality is very nice as well. For being a mostly plastic construction, feels quite sturdy. I would say that there is a slight problem that I've experienced where the Joy-Cons at the side, if you were to move them, they do jostle a little bit, do sort of shake, which sort of leaves me plants a seed of doubt in my mind as to whether, you know, when I'm carrying it around in a bag or I throw it into a bag or something, don't really want it to break off. So those are a little bit flimsy, but I do have a case for it. It's a pretty rugged case. Contained space for the games and everything, but yeah. Anyway, it's a nice console, and I do carry it pretty much everywhere I go, or I just keep it at home sometimes, because docking on television is so easy, especially if you have that dock that comes with it. You just plug it in to your mains and the HDMI port, and it works like a gem. Playing Skyrim on that big screen is a lot better than playing Skyrim on the Switch itself. Also, I do have a PlayStation Vita as well, which it's quite old now, but I'm going to try to instill some life into it. Maybe buy a few games for very cheap and just see how that goes, because I like the screen better on the PlayStation Vita, even though it is smaller. I do have a PS4, so it sort of links well. And Remote Play, I have used Remote Play, you know, where you can, even when the television is switched off, you can still keep playing if you connect the Vita to the PlayStation 4, and you're close to the PlayStation 4, you can keep playing. Say you're playing a game of Madden, and television needs to be used by someone else, or someone else wants to watch the TV, just connect your Vita, you can keep playing Madden, so it's quite useful, especially for games where you don't need that wide field of view. I wouldn't recommend doing this for shooter games, for example. And I wouldn't recommend playing far away or doing it for online games, because if you have bad internet, I've experienced it before where it just shakes. It doesn't shake. It becomes glitchy and annoying. You know, you don't want to be doing that far away from your console or with an online game. And now to the game that I've been playing, and it might be pretty late, but I also got this as a gift for Christmas. I didn't buy it myself. Spider-Man PS4, and I cannot praise this game enough. I mean, the moment I put it onto the PlayStation 4, it just felt perfect. I'm an avid Spider-Man fan. Pretty much, I'm an avid. I do read comic books, I guess, and I do like the superhero movies and all that. So, playing a Spider-Man, something I read in my childhood a lot, felt so right. The web slinging feels extremely fluid. I know they have the same system that they have in Spider-Man 2, which is one of the classics for the Xbox and the PS2, I believe. Where in Spider-Man 1, the original, you would swing to the sky, and it wasn't realistic at all. For them, it was more efficient. It was kind of lazy how they worked around that. In Spider-Man 2, they, thanks to the developers at Treyarch, they put a system in where Spider-Man would swing to walls, and the physics was just right. And so Spider-Man PS4 evolved this, and it's just so smooth. It's silky smooth, just to swing around and see where it takes you. You don't even have a destination in mind. You can just be swinging around the open New York, which is extremely accurate to real life Manhattan. And it's just, you don't even have to be doing anything. You can just be swinging around, and there's side quests everywhere. There's various side missions and things to unlock. There's 28 base suits, I believe. And you can unlock an extra 12, I think, on DLCs. An extra nine on DLCs, which I'm looking to get. I am currently negotiating on eBay with someone to get these DLCs. And actually, I do have a question for anyone who knows this. I do want to know. Basically, I bought this game in Spain. I have a PlayStation account that is UK, and the DLCs that I'm going to be buying, if this is the case, are from the UK, so the code would work. So would the UK DLCs codes that were redeemed in the UK store work in the Spanish game? I do believe that there are policies or some sort of rules on this, but they're not very clear. I've searched through forums and haven't really gotten an answer because I believe that's the same EU region, but I'm not too sure. So I'll leave the email again, and if anyone can answer, that'd be great. But yeah, the Spider-Man game is fantastic. The story's great. I'm sure many of you have played it if you're listening to this. It's just an overall complete experience, and I can't wait to get the DLCs for it. All right, so 10 minutes in, let's get to the news of this podcast. And the first bit of news is some crazy news that I saw on The Verge, and this is that Xiaomi has announced a $150 Redmi Note 7, which is the new iteration of the Redmi series. The most recent one being the Redmi Note 6. And this one is going to have a 48 megapixel double camera. Wow. Okay. 48 megapixel cameras, $150, and it's an entry-level Xiaomi Redmi branded Note 7. If you know Xiaomi, they're known for their high-quality, cheap phones, and this appears to be pretty good. It's got a 48-megapixel camera with an f/over 1.8 lens, and that's the primary sensor on the back, and it's got a secondary 5-megapixel sensor that is used for depth. So it's got 0.8 micron pixels, and it can do pixel binning for the equivalent of a 12-megapixel photo instead, like how the Mate 20 Pro, I believe, even though it has a 40-megapixel sensor, it takes its pictures in 10 megapixels because it does pixel binnings and creates a high quality, very high quality image. But yeah, it is because it can do 12 megapixels and it's larger size, so 1.6 microns. So it's a pretty big sensor, which means it should gather plenty of light. But obviously, hardware is not everything. Just because you have a 48-megapixel camera doesn't mean it's going to be good. So we're going to have to see how the post-processing would affect this camera. I don't trust it completely. It is $150. I mean, some compromises would have to been made somewhere, but I don't see any. The sensor looks to be pretty good with those initial specs. It should take pretty good pictures. The rest of the device is pretty standard entry-level Xiaomi. It's got a 6.3-inch 19 by 5 by 9 1080p LCD display, which is pretty standard for phones at this price range from Xiaomi. 13 megapixel selfie camera on the front, 4000 milliamp hour battery, USB type C, and hurrah, a headphone jack. So that stays there. Very nice. And it has the Snapdragon 660, which is probably where they took the compromise because there are newer processors out, the 710, the 670. So maybe that's where they took the price. They took the price hit right there. It's $150 or 999 Kwai. And well, compared to the other 48-megapixel phones, it's extremely cheap because a V20 is a lot more expensive at nearly 4,000 yuan. And so, yeah, the CEO of Xiaomi definitely made a point of comparing the Note 7 to the other 48-megapixel phones. I don't know if it's going to be sold in the US. Doesn't look like it. Looks like it's going to be sold in China and India to start. But this phone, well, it's what we're seeing. It's what we're seeing. It's what we've been seeing for the past few years, where flagship features just get passed down to the mid and low end. This phone has a notch, so the notch is over the flagships, and it's moved down. It happened with the glass backs and the metal designs. It happened originally with fingerprint scanner as well. Happened with Type C. And now it's happening with it happened with the double cameras, by the way, and the triple cameras. Just look at the A8 series, quadruple cameras even. And now it's happening with large sensors. This is only $150. Of course, we'd have to see the performance of the camera before reaching any judgment, I suppose. I mean, I'm guessing it would be crazy if there was no performance hit at all compared to something like a Mate 20 or a P20 Pro. but yeah, it's just the trend that we're seeing where the features just get passed down to cheaper and cheaper phones, and I'm pretty excited to see when this hits the market to test it out. I mean, it's so cheap, might as well even buy one. But yeah, very excited about this. Xiaomi has always made very good cheap phones, and this looks like it's no different. Okay, moving on to the next story. The next phone, indeed, that has been played with or toyed with is the Vivo Nex Dual Display Edition. So, if you guys know about the Vivo Nex, last year, Vivo and Oppo introduced slider phones, HTML slider phones, with the front camera being, especially Vivo introduced them with the front camera that is motorized. When you take a selfie, you pop that one out, but it popped that one out by itself. And this year, they've introduced the dual display version of this phone. It does not have the whole. Does it have the pop-up camera? It doesn't have the pop-up camera, obviously, because it's a dual display phone. And basically, it's got two AMOLED panels, one on the front, one on the back. Like you do with a dual display phone. And I believe Nubia did one of these, the Nubia X, where it had an IPS panel on the front and an OLED on the back. These both are OLED, which I suppose would save battery life here. It has the Snapdragon 845, so it doesn't have the 855. Obviously, I don't think that's come to market yet. That was a big voice break. Yeah, it's this trend of dual display phones. I'm not too sure about it. I mean, I would rather have just one screen, but I do suppose that it is a way around the notch, and people are still finding ways around the notch. I mean, right now, instead of the notch, we're transitioning into this punch hole design with Samsung, who, by the way, have totally skipped the notch. They haven't even gotten into that at all. But going back to this phone, it has the Gorilla Glass front and back, an aluminium frame. It does look pretty nice. And it has like a typical color gradient, which is extremely popular nowadays. And it's pretty thin for the size and the fact that it has two displays. It has three cameras on the back. It actually has a ring light and an IR sensor as well, so pretty feature packed. You control your AC and your television with that. But a ring light, I do suppose that's for selfies. There's three cameras on the back. That is your primary and your selfie with a flash. So you take the pictures of of selfies and just normal pictures with those cameras. You'd have to switch the phone around if you want a selfie. The display on the back, which holds the cameras and everything, does have quite a bit of bezels. The front one is basically bezel-less. I mean, it is more fragile, and I don't know how case design would work for this. You'd have to have a bumper case or something that would go around the edges. You can't really cover the screen in this instance. But they do include a case in the box, and but I mean, you can shatter this pretty quickly. One fall could kill both displays, and I suppose that's a pain to fix. But I don't know, it's pretty niche, pretty nice looking design. You'll definitely stand out. So the display in the front is 6.3 inches. It's a Quad HD, 19 by 5 by 9, which seems to be the popular aspect ratio coming into 2019. And the secondary display is a bit smaller at 5.4 inches and has a resolution of just 1080 by 1920, so 1080p standard resolution. Both are AMOLED. Colors appear to be pretty good. Not great. I mean, AMOLED. I mean, pretty punchy, you know. But it's not a great AMOLED. But it's got good viewing angles and stuff. But yeah, it has Type-C connectivity, which is usual. And there is actually a 3.5mm headphone jack, which is fantastic. There's also 22.5 watts fast charging. And there is, of course, an in-display fingerprint scanner. Because, of course, where would they put the fingerprint scanner else? Anywhere else? Would they put it anywhere else? No. But this one has one. Obviously, it's not going to be as fast as your back facing fingerprint scanner or as reliable, to be honest, but it's there. And it's, you know, making its way to more phones and more phones. And it does have a 3D face unlock feature, which is kind of like the iPhone X and XS's, using time-of-flight camera sensors. So that works with the IR depth sensing on the back of the phone, which is going to be slightly counterintuitive. When you pick it up, you'd expect the front, because you want to use the front screen, but it looks kind of unconventional. You'd have to look at the back for it to unlock and then move to the front. I suppose they would have put the in-display fingerprint scanner on the front and the IR face unlocking on the back, but I'm not sure about that. It has all the connectivity you would need. Bluetooth 5, which is always nice. 845, Adreno 630, typical flagship specs for 2018, and 10 gigs of RAM, which is a bit crazy. Don't need that, just for the specs. And of course, it runs FunTouch OS. You know, these Chinese OS's, not the best. I'm a fan of stock Android, but hopefully it's slimmed down in 2019 a little bit more. But this is aimed at China and the Asian market, not really aimed at the US. I suppose you'll be able to import this on Amazon or on our GearBest. So the cameras, there's a 12-megapixel primary sensor with OIS, f1.7, and a 2-megapixel night vision sensor with aperture of f1.0. I wonder what that does. And a third time-of-flight sensor, 3D face capturing for your face unlocking. So pretty good, pretty interesting. It did get released at CES, and it retails for 5,000 yuan, which is not cheap. It's not too expensive either. An iPhone here can cost upwards of 7,000, so I'm not too upset with this pricing, and it looks fantastic. All right. The final story is about stuff at CES that I find quite interesting. Obviously, as you all know, at CES, you don't really get to buy much of the stuff that is announced. You always see it announced, and then you never really get it until years to come. It's been a trend at CES. They've got all the concepts. They've got all the things that are awesome looking, but then you can never get them. But there's a few things that you can get. And one of which I like quite a bit, and that's what we're going to start with. It's the Blue Ember microphone. Of course, Blue Microphones, a very famous microphone brand. I was debating on getting one of these microphones, the blue ones, to start the podcast, the Blue Yeti, but I just found a great deal on the Samsung that I'm using, so that's what I'm using. But I would consider upgrading, and this Blue Ember looks to be pretty expensive, $1,000, and it is an XLR model. I would like to get a mixer in the future for this podcast, so it would be pretty nice. But yeah, the Ember, it's a tall, thin microphone. Looks to be a little bit lighter than the Yeti, less big. Yeti is pretty big, pretty hefty microphone. But the Ember looks to be for professionals. It's an XLR mic. It's priced at $100, not $1,000. I read that wrong. My concern upgrade to this. Why not? But for the moment, I am quite happy with the Samsung that I'm using. Hopefully, the audio quality has been acceptable over the past 9 episodes. But yeah, blue mics are always nice. It's a good option, I suppose, for recording podcasts or YouTube videos. So the second thing, which is going to get announced this year, and I'm also pretty hyped about, because I do a lot of sports. I do tennis. I do quite a lot of running when I can and go to the gym. And I don't really have a pair of good earbuds. I'm using these Sony, cheap Sony earbuds, which don't really, they're not great for this. So I've always considered using bone conducting headphones. And the Aftershocks X Trainers look to be pretty darn good. They're $150 and they're waterproof. And these are meant for swimmers, but the reason I'm considering these is because I sweat a hell of a lot when I do my sports. So when I'm running or doing at the gym, I just sweat so much and it makes it extremely uncomfortable to wear any other type of buds or anything like that. Sweat just gets everywhere, so I'd consider these if they could help out with that and resist the sweat, I suppose, and not get into my ears. Just have them close, but not in my ears. Again, they're meant for swimmers. It's not Bluetooth. They're bone conducting, and $150 looks like a pretty good deal as well. All right, so the final little thing I want to talk about from CES, which looks pretty good and has become more relevant, is something for the Nintendo Switch, and in particular, the PowerCast wireless charging grips. They look pretty darn good. They're coming this year. They're wireless chargers, and they wirelessly charges the Joy-Cons, which is the controllers, for the Switch while you play, which is pretty darn good. And nice range on them. They'll be up for it by October, and just something very simple, a problem that I've had where I'm just playing on the Joy-Cons and the battery just dies. So having this really would help, especially in transit, traveling and everything. Really benefit from having something like this, just quite useful to have. So I'll put the articles and everything in the description. I've gone pretty much half an hour for this podcast, probably my longest one yet. But yeah, thank you guys for listening. The website will be out soon, don't worry. Just have a lot of work to do. I have exams coming up on the January 21st, so having trouble, you know, aligning studying and everything together. But yeah, hopefully you guys enjoyed episode 9 of the Tech Surge podcast, and I'll catch you next time.